Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thanks for joining us. This week and next week, we're going to be joined by Ward Hannigan. Ward's an active investor, a landlord, a developer, and an educator. And if someone made their fortune buying a trustee sales, I'd say it's a good bet that Ward trained them. Ward, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Ward, how'd you get started as a real estate investor?
Well, I got started back in 1970 when I was a bust out of the stock brokerage business and got a job with a brand new company those days, Countrywide, San Diego, 1970. I was a mortgage rep for them for 2 years and then saw the money that agents were making compared to what I was making. And so I jumped ship, got a license, and started out with a company in Chula Vista, California, which specialized in apartment sales. And I did that for 10 years, from 72 to 82.
Okay, so you were involved in that decade that really where prices exploded, but interest rates did so at the same time.
Right. And interest rates gyrated all over the place. You know, people now think that anything over 6 takes their breath away. Gee, we were happy in those days, man, to get something that stayed under 10.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, a lot of times it was not only was it 15 or more, but it was also a lot of points.
Yeah, well, that really hit in the early 80s, and that's why I thought I was set for life, making lots of money buying and selling apartment houses, and which is a voluntary purchase. And so who wants to voluntarily buy real estate at 16-18%? And so by 1982, mink-lined rut was stripped right away from me.
That's an interesting term, a voluntary purchase. Is there any involuntary purchases in real estate?
Well, it's the perception. In other words, if people perceive they want something,
right,
and people perceive they need something. If you and I didn't have a car right now, we probably wouldn't be on this radio show. We'd probably be out, you know, taking a cab to the nearest car lot to buy a car because our perception is we need one of those suckers.
Absolutely. Okay, what attracted you eventually then to the trustee sales side of the investment business? That must have happened in the early, mid-80s?
Yeah, actually, what I actually got curious about foreclosures, because one of the reasons I was successful as an apartment broker in the 70s was convincing sellers of apartment buildings to carry back their financing rather than us going out and having to find some new financing at high interest rates for buyers. And once in a while, these carry back deeds of trust would go awry. Somebody three buyers later on wouldn't be paying, and so the original party that I convinced to carry back the loan would call me up and say, Ward, you know, 3 years ago, you told me to take this trust deed. Now it's not performing. What do I do? I was just finishing up going to law school at that time. So I said, well, it's simple. You just start a foreclosure. What does that mean? So now I had to define foreclosure. I had to define the steps. So I started really looking into it for that reason.
Was your original bent when you went to study the legal aspect, was it real estate, or what type of lawyer were you?
Oh, what was I going to do?
Yeah.
I hate to admit it, but I was going to law school for ego, and
okay.
I didn't have any particular, subject in mind until after I got through it. You know, I started going through, and I gravitated more and more towards real estate. So sure, when I, in fact, the elective classes that you can take, the few that you can take in law school, were all oriented towards real estate.
When did you end up buying your first property at a trustee sale?
That was in 1982.
82, okay.
Right. That started in 82, right off the bat. This was after 6 months of teaching myself. I had to, there was nobody around at Dave Delgado, Tom Vu, those kinds of idiots, but there was nobody that I really, really could count on to be my guru. And I really looked. And so finally I just said, well, it's up to me, you know. And so I went to the library. And I suggest anybody do this. Went to the library, and I got all of the well-known books from respected California attorneys writing on the subject of foreclosure. And in those days, it was Robert Bruss, who since recently died, and John Beck. And they both had pretty good books on foreclosure and also focusing on California foreclosures, trustee sales.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went to the law library and read the foreclosure code, 2924. And then from there, I went to the sales every single day during the week for 6 months. And I just lurked and watched. And when I saw some guys really scrapping over a property, I would then take that and reverse engineer it down at the recorder's office.
And then find out why they were that interested in it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then I'd go out and look at the property, and I'd comp it. I'd do all that kind of stuff.
Yes. Okay. Okay, between 81 and 84, trustee sales went up about 1,000% in California. That was right in the middle of when you were beginning.
I couldn't have started at a better time. Mind-boggling.
That was probably exactly right. Does that usually follow that when you have an explosion in trustee sales, that there's better deals at a trustee sale?
There's foreclosures is like diamond mining. So there's some great diamonds in the ground, but you got to go through just, you know, train loads of ore to get to them, that type of thing. And so, yeah, there were a lot, just like there's going to be a lot now. Most of them aren't going to be worth the paper they're printed on. You just have to develop a knack for sensing, where the good ones are. Reminds me of, you know, the pigs in France that had to use hogs to find out the truffles, right?
Okay. No, I really don't know that one.
Oh, yeah.
You got me.
Me a truffle pig or something. I don't know.
Okay. Do you find that there's very many people still making a full-time living doing the trustee sales right now?
Not the pros.
Okay.
I don't find the pros really, the old pros that I know that are smarter than smart, they back off, let the nincompoops, scratch and fight amongst themselves, and, we'll come back when it makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's true. Plus, they're probably pretty well off, too. That's the nice part of not having to do anything that's marginal, because you've made your fortune, and now you can sit there and wait until it gets very profitable again.
Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't think of one. You said, Ward, think of somebody that's worth less than $1 million who's full-time foreclosure. A pro, I couldn't think of a person who fits that definition.
No, they've had a chance to do very, very well.
Right.
In an up market, obviously, they end up getting bonus money, just like we all did every time we touched a property. It kept on going up. I hadn't thought of this. I wasn't going to ask you about this, but you began something you called a Dingbat Retirement
Mm-hmm.
Program. When did you start that? What was the timing of that?
I started that about 3 or 4 years after I knew that I would never have to scrounge for money again in my life. And in fact, I was really smug. I'm good at smug. I don't know if you've ever been smug. I'm really good at being smug. And so, but after 3 years, I was 45. So, I mean, when people think, oh, Ward, he was lucky he got started when he was young, I was an old dude by the time I got started in foreclosure.
So you got started in your early 40s?
Yeah, 42.
42, okay.
Yeah, and so by 45, I knew that I knew what I need to know to really make money at it. And I hate to admit this, but I was not that careful about how much I spent, since I knew I could always go to the well and get more. And then a thought hit me that, gee, do I really want to do this even though I love it? But do I want to do it when I'm forced to do it when I'm 65 or 70? And the answer was no. So that's when I decided to take some of this incredible cash that was coming at me and divert it into a recurring income stream. And if you look at my Dingbat Retirement Plan, you know, the article that I have on my website, I really had to do some soul searching to find the kind of property I wanted that would give me the freedom I wanted, because that's what my connotation with retirement is freedom. And so I wanted some economic freedom at that point where I didn't have to hustle. And it was the simplest thing for me to do once I noodled it out. But it took me, again, probably a good 6 months to noodle out the kind of property you want to buy. Most people just buy anything and want to rent it out. And I did that for years, and I had all kinds of hit-and-miss luck with it until I sat down and said, you know, what is there? What is the thread between the deals that I've had that some I liked and some I couldn't stand? And mm-hmm. It turned out to be my tenant. And that some tenants, I loved the property because of the tenants, and others, I hated the property because of the tenants. Well, what kind of tenants did I like? And it turned out to be a retired you know, single person that's probably 65 years of age or older. And what I discovered is I want them in there. I want to rent to somebody in the final 20 years of their life. You can have all the young ones. I'll take the ones that are 65 and older.
Now, does that mean that there's a certain structure size that you want to limit it to?
Yeah, you know, what you have to do is if you figure you want to get rich, first of all, you figure out who your customer is. Well, I finally figured out my customer that I wanted to appeal to, was a retiree. And so then I said, okay, what do they want? Well, they're very frugal, so they don't want to pay any more than they have to. And I figured out they want a one-bedroom, one-bath, single-family house. Because when you get to about 65 to 70, I think there's a gene that clicks on you in the human body that says, you know, we deserve some peace and quiet after living so for so long. And so they want peace and quiet means just their own little, small little tiny bungalow that doesn't take all day to clean and take care of, and it's quiet and it's neat, and so they don't have to listen to the noise of other people and the cooking odors of other people and the bedlam that usually goes around and living in multi-member, you know, properties. So it was a one-bed, one-bath house. Dingbats, I call them dingbats because the last time you ever heard anybody brag about them, you know, did you ever go to a cocktail party and have a developer bragging about the one-bed, one-bath he's building? I don't think so. So no. Here you got a declining asset. So what happens to the remainder is going up in value in an area, Sunbelt area, that is very attractive to the customer you want.
Now, is it very typical that they stay until
they're no longer here? I tell them, and it's not a joke, and I'm not being mean. I just tell them, really, you know, if we take you as a tenant, you're not leaving until you go out feet first. And it's either on a stretcher or a gurney. And they love it.
They asked
me to put that in writing. That's a promise, right, Ward? Yeah, that's a promise.
Now, do you typically keep the rent stable then for them?
No. They're all on Section 8, which is a governmental federal program that's processed by locals. And so I can raise the rent, and Section 8 picks up the increase.
Right, it doesn't pass
it on to the tenant. So the tenant just basically amounts, the tenant pays 10% of the rent, and Section 8, and transfer of funds from your listeners to the federal government comes back to Ward Hannigan in a form of a rent subsidy.
And what was the typical purchase price that you would get these for?
Normally, I would buy, I still have them, I have 23, but normally I would have... I would buy something around $30,000 when the average price for, let's say, a typical 2 to 3 bedroom house in a blue collar area was running about $120,000.
And I almost hate to ask this, but San Diego at its peak, what were those little places worth?
You can't believe it. Countrywide, they're probably not going to like to hear me saying this on the radio, but Countrywide made me. An offer for a loan on a 2-on-1. I had two dingbats in one lot. They're 20 by 30, like little shoeboxes. They're cute because I keep my properties up, but it's still, both of them were built probably around 1908 or something. Getting around maybe $800 a month off of each one. And they came up with an appraisal, and I saw the appraiser, met him there at the property, and that appraisal came in at $460,000.
$460,000.
Mind blowing. I bought those properties. I bought them at. I bought that property, both of them, for $58,000 in 1985. So if you divide the 58 by 2, I paid $29,000 each. And Countrywide valued them at $460,000, giving me a line of credit loan for I think $340,000 on it.
That's pretty good markup, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. How have things changed in San Diego? Now let's talk about the market a little bit. Things changed in San Diego, say, since late 2005.
2005, things are really cooling off, and you can see it's a downtrend. Foreclosure is a lagging indicator, but we could see it where the NODs start. I like to look at the NODs, which is the beginning of foreclosure, and how they wax and wane through time. And so I look at that, and I look at the percentage between the NODs, which is the beginning of foreclosure, and then how many make it to the end of the foreclosure process, which is evidenced by the recording of a trustee's deed. So it's been that statistic has been growing and growing. And from a low of 11% to now around 37. And
so just to clarify, I just want to make sure the audience understands. We're talking about 11% of the NODs converted to a trustee sale in at the good times, and now we're up to 37% of them converting to a trustee sale.
Right. Houston, 05. If you go to our website, there's a says foreclosure statistics, and you can see the table. And in 05, it was down, that's what you picked, that was down to 11% annual. And then 06, it jumped to 20%. And in 07, we're now up to 36.7 year-to-date. We got one more month to add, which would be December. But if anything, I think it'll get maybe even larger, so maybe 37-38%. Now, the highest it ever got in recent times was in 97, yeah. And that was just after the debacle of, you know, from 90 to 95. And I said foreclosures is a lagging indicator. So it was 51% conversion from NODs to notice of trustees, to trustees deeds in 1997.
And that's just for San Diego?
Yeah.
Okay.
We just track San Diego.
Okay. For the state of California right now, it's 55%. So
yeah.
San Diego is actually healthier percentage-wise than a lot of areas.
Right.
I went to your website, and I'm going to mention it now before I forget. Foreclosureforum.com, is that it?
Right.
Okay. A lot of great information there. I noticed that November's numbers really were a lot less than October's for 07. Do you have any thought as to why that was?
No, I don't.
It's just
an aberration, you know.
Okay.
Like everything, there's nothing smooth or super perfect in life. And yeah, that surprised me too, because the month before there was a 911, and then it drops in November to 535.
Yeah, a big drop.
You know, and I go, wow. And so, in fact, I had somebody on our discussion board, which I answered this morning. He was doubting the accuracy of it. Was that accurate? All I got, jazz. And I said, you know, I guess they don't know, you know, I take nothing for granted, and these numbers, those foreclosure numbers, come directly from the recorder's records. I don't know how you can get any better than the recorder's count of everything they record, but that's where we get it.
Okay. If 100 trustee sales occurred in San Diego in, let's say, October of 07, how many do you feel turned into REOs? What percentage of that 100?
Oh, huge number.
In the 90s?
Number. Yeah, you see, because most of the stuff that's going to sale for trustee sale now is fluff, okay, what I call fluff. This is that airy-fairy stuff that is goofball financing, liar loans, yada, yada, yada. What you really want to look at is the stuff that's in foreclosure, not because people should never bought the property, should never been qualified for it, but people who did honestly, genuinely qualify for loans, and then something happened in life which severely impacted the income they used to have and now is tremendously depleted, either through death or illness or divorce or something like that. And until they cancel those travesties, then foreclosures are going to keep going on and on and on. So you just look for, I'll tell you what, you know, the first initial thing we look for is the age of the foreclosing trust deed. And if that trust deed isn't at least 5 years old, I turn my nose up at it, because there's not enough time for real equity to have created. I'm not interested in stuff that somebody bought 2 years ago and is now in foreclosure.
Most of the properties that are foreclosing are 2006 loans, if not even 07.
Right, exactly.
Almost immediate.
Yeah.
What's your take on the new subprime relief agreement?
I think it's a joke. I mean, even if it's not a joke, let's just say it's okay, super duper. It doesn't help the bulk of the people, and it doesn't help the people that the real foreclosures come about because of not some goofy loan you got, but because some goofy wife you got, or some goofy disease you got, or something like that. You know, and so it doesn't matter what's going to. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care what happens with subprime. You can bail them all out. I don't care, because that's not where the real foreclosures are. Got to look at, 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 year old stuff.
Well, okay, but those unreal foreclosures, the ones that really the loans shouldn't have been made, do become REOs and compete with the marketplace.
Well, I don't right now. I don't see a real, honest to goodness across the board, a willingness of lenders to dump their REOs at anything less than any other seller, and that's fair market value. Well, you know, you and I aren't interested in fair market value. Maybe people who need houses to live in do, but for investors, you need to buy it under the market.
Well, okay. Now, just not to be contradictory, but it's okay. You know, we've been watching the auctions, not the trustee sales, and we went to one that we knew would probably work out fairly well. And we recently bought six houses at that auction, which is, you know, a lot for this cycle where I'm trying to be very cautious. But these lenders are getting so many of these properties now that they are at least saying yes to a final bid at some of these auctions.
Right.
So that's, you're right, out of the MLS and not agreeing to short sales, they have had that opinion up till now. But I think next year, the numbers that I calculate, first of all, we looked at the car information. They project about 340,000 sales next year,
yeah.
Regular sales. There's going to be over 300,000 NODs filed in California next year.
Okay.
And that ratio has never existed before.
Yeah.
So lenders are really going to have a challenge getting their retail price next year. They're going to literally represent one of every two sales next year.
Yeah. Well, so. I agree, and I think that it's going to take I think a lot of the lenders, you know, kind of like witch doctors, after a while, believe in their own witchcraft, you know, and they're going to jawbone the fact that there's not real some serious problems, or if it is, it's just a temporary trough here, and we're going to come back out of it and all that. Because, you know, the Countrywide said everything's going to hell in a handbasket. You can imagine the kind of impact that would have on the general real estate market, which really wouldn't help Countrywide. So they're not going to say anything like that, even if it's true.
There was an interview that I saw him. He's on a panel, and one of the things he did say was that it was good to get rid of the stated income loans, because the only reason that was stated income in the first place is because everyone lied.
Yeah, it didn't exist. You're talking about Angelo Mozilla?
Yeah. He actually said that. I was pretty surprised. You've been around quite a while. Have you ever seen a time where it was so easy to get financing?
It just blew my mind. I mean, when I first heard that a non-VA borrower got 100% loan, I actually didn't believe the person. They were buying a house from me, and so I thought she was a vet because she got 100% no money loan. And this was like in 2001 or something like that. And I couldn't believe it. So I didn't say anything to her, but I double-checked. Sure enough, she was getting a conventional loan with nothing down. What? You know? I never heard of that. I just thought it was a government program.
No, it became so commonplace. Rosamond, yeah, the 93 houses we built 9 miles from Lancaster, mm-hmm. I would say 93 sales, probably 9 people had down payments. Mm-hmm. So 90% of the sales were 100% financing.
Yeah.
Now, you follow the foreclosures all the time. We've done it sporadically, but we've paid attention to the ratios of what's going to foreclosure. In Riverside, 50% or 60% of every day's trustee sales is a simultaneous first and a second. Mm-hmm. Is that common in San Diego?
I sure now it is. Those would be the loans that I'm really not too particularly interested in, which would be those that were made, let's say, sometime within the last 5 years.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just I'm looking for deals, not just at trustee sales, but you know, lenders going to be taking back a lot of this stuff, so. Okay, we've just about run out of time for this first segment. So, Ward, your website again, foreclosureforum.com.
That's correct.
And go there and you'll find a lot of information about foreclosures and the laws. And there's even a blog where people talk about investing. So, Ward, thanks for joining us. And we'll pick it up continuing on in the next segment. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week here on News Talk 590 KTIE.